Rocker D. Schneider asked Paul Ryan this month to stop using Twisted Sister's We're Not Going to Take It song. And in response, the Ryan campaign said, we're not going to play it anymore. And earlier this month, in response to Congressman Paul Ryan listing Rage Against the Machine as one of his favorite bands, guitarist Tom Morello said, Paul Ryan's love of Rage Against the Machine is amusing because he is the embodiment of the machine that our music has been raging against for two decades. These two items about music and politics prompt our discussion this hour about music and politics, and the attempts by campaigns to pick songs to convey a political message, and the backlash that sometimes results. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Monday, August the 27th. We will talk about the role music is playing in the presidential election this year, and we will welcome your suggested campaign songs for the Romney-Ryan ticket or the Obama-Biden ticket at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let me welcome our guests. They are Benjamin Shaning, an assistant professor of music and director of the choral and vocal activities at Gainesville State College in Oakwood, Georgia. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Eric Casper, an associate professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Barron County and the municipal judge in Rice Lake. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks to both of you for being back. Listeners may remember we had you back. We had you on the air earlier this year when your book, you are co-authors of the book, Don't Stop Thinking About the Music, The Politics of Song and Musicians in Presidential Campaigns, came out earlier this year. I'm glad you're back because we certainly have music and politics back in the news big time these days. You will also be presenting more on this at the Wisconsin Book Festival in Madison on November the 11th. So we'll look forward to seeing you in Madison for the Wisconsin Book Festival as well. But we should point out, Professor Shaning, that you used to be at UW-Barron County, but apparently have moved to Georgia.
That is correct, but I'm still fostering my partnership with Dr. Casper, and we're going to be working on future projects, so I'm looking forward to that.
Well, it's good to have you both on. Let me ask you both, since our discussion was prompted by some of the recent items in the news, like rocker D. Schneider asking Paul Ryan to stop using We're Not Going to Take It Anymore, that's... Eric Casper first. This isn't new. Sometimes music or politicians often get into trouble when they start playing songs and they didn't ask permission first. Isn't that right?
Right, and that's become something that's much more common over the last 10 to 20 years than it had been previously in American history. In part, as we talk about in the book, because of the trend here in recent decades of using these canned pop songs instead of campaigns spending a lot of time and resources writing their own songs, they're just taking these pre-recorded songs and making use of them. Sometimes they're doing that by securing permission first and doing it the right way or the legal way, and sometimes either because they don't care or maybe they don't realize it or what have you, they end up playing these songs on the campaign trail without getting permission, and then if the artist disagrees with that candidate politically, typically they will raise a stink about it. Sometimes they'll have their lawyers send cease and desist letters to the campaigns, and then it becomes this negative news story that the campaign has to spend time dealing with instead of talking about whatever issue it is that they're trying to campaign on at that particular time.
Yeah, Ryan's campaign had a kind of funny response when they said, okay, we're not going to play it anymore. but is this a problem that Republican politicians have more than Democratic politicians?
If you look historically over the last few decades, it tends to be the case that you have more complaints by artists towards the Republican candidates Now, that may, I'm not sure if that's really a reflection of the fact that Republicans do it more often than Democrats, or if it's simply a reflection that because there are many more artists who are aligned politically with the Democratic Party, that when their music gets used without their permission, they're not as likely to complain when it's a Democrat doing it as is the case when a Republican is doing it.
And Professor Shaney, your thoughts on this particular example using Twisted Sister's We're Not Going to Take It Anymore by the Ryan campaign?
Well, I think the song itself was probably a good choice by the Ryan campaign for the message that they're trying to bring out. But I think Dr. Casper has it nailed on the head here that artists really need to cater to their base. A lot of the times, and in order to prevent themselves from losing their own popularity, they need to make sure that they protect themselves by not allowing people of opposite political views of their own or their fans to use their music to make sure that they solidify their own and make sure that their own fan base is kept happy. You know, it's really about protecting their image a lot of times.
Yeah, here's one example was Paul Ryan, when he was picked as the VP running mate, had listed Rage Against the Machine as one of his favorite bands. He didn't use any of their songs in any kind of rally or ad or anything like that. But the Rage Against the Machine's guitarist, Tom Morello, who was often in Wisconsin playing for anti-Governor Walker rallies, said, "Hey, you know, this is ironic. You know, it's amusing that you love our music because we don't love your politics." I'm wondering, Eric Casper, I guess even listing favorite bands can pose some issues for politicians.
Right. Although it's a little easier for Ryan to state that, you know, he likes a particular band, because it accomplishes some of the same things that playing the music at a rally would. I mean, it gets the message out, whatever you want it to be related to that song, that you like it, but you don't have to pay, you know, the copyright, right? You don't have to pay for the usage of it because you're not using it. You're just stating that you like it. And we've seen candidates, you know, on both sides of the aisle, you know, reveal their campaign songs in recent years, or not their campaign songs, but the songs that they like in recent years, as a way to try to mimic what playing the song at the rally does. Now Ryan, you know, maybe this is really, you know, this really is his favorite music, and he likes the charged up type of music that it is, and he doesn't really care about the lyrics. Maybe it's the case that this sends a message to younger voters that, hey, I'm kind of hip. I'm into music that you wouldn't expect a vice presidential candidate to be into, and as a way to kind of court younger voters. But certainly, it is a band which expresses very, very socialist messages, and it's very easy to understand why the lead guitarist there, Tom Morello, was then very adamant and very vocal about his statements that, well, this is not what our music represents, what the vision that Ryan has for the country. And so there is a little bit of a disconnect there, but I can definitely see that there are advantages to Ryan making use of that reference to Rage Against the Machine if he's trying to court the younger voters, which President Obama won pretty handily in 2008.
Mm-hmm. Let me also ask, we checked, we wanted to see with the GOP convention that is getting underway this week. It's canceled today because of the tropical storm Isaac, but will resume tomorrow. We wanted to see who was performing at the GOP convention, and we were surprised to see on Friday that Wycliffe Jean, who is or was a staunch supporter of President Barack Obama in 2008, is scheduled to be performing at the Republican convention. What do you make of that, Professor Casper?
Well, I'd say there's a couple of things going on there. One is that apparently this, with what Wycliffe Jean is performing, is part of what's called the Got Your Six campaign, which aims to help military service members reintegrate into civilian life, which is being done as part of an effort there at the convention. And so it may not necessarily signal the end of Jean's support for President Obama, but You know, it certainly is something that's going to raise eyebrows, right, when someone who's a supporter of one candidate all of a sudden is playing at the convention for the other candidate. And he was, Jean was actually kind of a late entrant for that because apparently Willie Nelson had been offered that role and declined it. It's not clear what his reasons were for that. And then Randy Travis was going to be doing it, but given some of his recent legal troubles, I'm not sure if he bowed out or if he got pulled from it.
Right.
So then Wycliffe Jean was added. And so, again, what that means for Jean, it's not clear, but certainly I can understand why the Republican Party would want him there. It goes toward their effort to help court African-American voters, which, much like the youth vote, is a group that President Obama won pretty handily in 2008. And so this may be a way for the Republicans to perhaps make some inroads into that voting demographic.
Do you have any comment on Wycliffe Jean being a GOP convention performer, Professor Shaning?
Well, I agree with what Dr. Casper said, and one thing that I think is of note is there are kind of mixed reports out there right now as to whether Wycliffe Jean will actually be performing for the same reasons that have been mentioned, you know, staunch supporter of Obama 4 years ago, now not necessarily performing for the RNC, but performing for a charity that is going to have their event right around the RNC and have it associated with the RNC. And so, you know, it's another one of those image issues that start to come up, you know, again, a staunch supporter of Obama, not necessarily in favor of Republican politics. So even though it's really in support of the troops, which he's been known to go play concerts for the troops in the past, it seems like there's a chance that he might actually back out of this event to protect his image and make sure that he's not associated with the Republican ticket.
We are talking with the co-authors of Don't Stop Thinking About the Music, The Politics of Songs and Musicians in Presidential Campaigns. They are Eric Casper, who is an associate professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin, Barron County, and Benjamin Shaning, an assistant professor of music and director of choral and vocal activities at Gainesville State College in Oakwood, Georgia. And we welcome your thoughts and questions about the role music plays in presidential campaigns and in politics. And we're welcoming your questions for our guest, and we're also welcoming maybe your suggested campaign songs for either Mitt Romney's campaign or Barack Obama's campaign, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
So in love with you.
Remember that? That was President Obama singing Al Green's song. And indeed, President Obama has Al Green on his Spotify iPod list. This is a number of songs that they will be using during the campaign. And we're talking about music and presidential campaigns. We're talking about the role music is playing in the presidential election this year. And we're welcoming your suggested campaign songs, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guests are Benjamin Shaning and Eric Cass, co-authors of Don't Stop Thinking About the Music, The Politics of Songs and Musicians in Presidential Campaigns. And we do have a crooner-in-chief to some extent, don't we, Professor Casper?
It is an area that is a very dangerous one to get into, which is singing, if you're an elected official, unless you can do it well. It is kind of reminiscent of Bill Clinton, you know, famously playing his saxophone in 1992, and you know, it's something that's relatively rare for these elected politicians to actually have this musical talent. Now, without commenting on President Obama's musical style, I'll leave that to my colleague, Professor Shaning. It was the use of that song was an attempt to, you know, obviously a song that wasn't written with a campaign in mind, Al Green's Let's Stay Together. But the song's title and the hook has a very powerful message from an incumbent president to the voters, you know, vote for me so we can continue along the path that we're on now. The interesting thing about this particular election cycle, though, is that President Obama isn't the only one who has himself started singing. Of course, Governor Romney on the campaign trail, there's that now rather infamous clip of him singing America the Beautiful.
Yeah.
What I found most interesting about the two of them singing here in 2012 is that each one of them has then used the clip of the other singing in an attack ad, where Romney used the clip of Obama singing the Let's Stay Together with the first line of I'm So In Love With You in a campaign ad where, while the music was playing in the background, the ad ran headlines about President Obama rewarding campaign donors and, you know, the insinuation there that he's in love with these donors. And on the flip side of that, the Obama campaign has used the clip of Governor Romney singing America the Beautiful and use that while the music is playing, what with him singing, as a contrast. Then their ad has headlines about Bain Capital outsourcing jobs and Romney's offshore financial holdings, and so each one of them has in turn used the other one singing against them in a campaign ad.
That's funny. I'm sorry, I didn't realize that they were using those songs in campaign ads. Well, you want to critique the singing of both of our major party presidential candidates, Professor Shaning?
Well, what I would say first is to call what Governor Romney does singing is kind of treading a fine line. It's more a rhythmic speech. Romney uses his more as a poetic reading. However, President Obama, I think, has a shot at a music career when he's done.
Yeah.
So,
but it is that song, Let's Stay Together. And he can sing it. It is pretty. You know, that could be used well in the campaign, right, Professor Shaning?
Well, it can. And again, you hearken back to Bill Clinton in 1992 playing a sax in the Arsenio Hall show. It kind of shows the human side of him and makes him seem more attractive to the youth vote because he's doing things that the youth tend to be doing. So I think it's a really good campaign tactic when you actually have the musical ability to do it. So,
in fact, I guess for equal time purposes, since we have it, let's just take a listen to Mitt Romney's rendition of America the Beautiful.
Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountains' majesty.
All right. That's good enough. Is it, I don't know. Do most campaigns, and maybe Republican campaigns in particular, go for the more patriotic song, Professor Shaning?
I don't know that they necessarily go for a more patriotic song, but I think those patriotic songs speak well to their message of going back to the America we knew instead of going forward to the new America, which would be more of Obama's message with the idea of changing and moving forward. And so that may be why they hearken back to those more patriotic songs, to hearken back to the previous time.
And now President Obama, though, Professor Casper, really can't be playing a lot of songs about changing things because he doesn't want to change things now.
Yeah, that message from 2008 doesn't quite resonate the same way. The change you can believe in, when you're the incumbent, that doesn't really work. And the songs that President Obama has had on his Spotify list, for instance, which is an online music service that streams songs to members of that website, he posted back in February a list of 28 songs. A rather eclectic list of all sorts of different genres of music, and shortly thereafter, Mitt Romney put out his own playlist. President Obama's songs aren't necessarily emphasizing changes quite as much as they were as his message was in 2008. Although, interestingly enough, one of the songs on there kind of hits on that message, which is an REO Speedwagon song, "Roll with the Changes."
Ah.
which kind of takes it back to 2008 with that Change We Can Believe In message. But the lyrics go on to tell the listener that, you know, the singer is available when the listener is ready to move along with the changes that lay ahead. And so in that sense, it makes a good message by saying, well, we've instituted these changes and now we need to roll with them. And so it kind of tries to continue that theme from 2008 without saying, well, we need to take some sort of different course now, which obviously wouldn't be a very good message for an incumbent candidate.
Is there an interesting selection you can share from Mitt Romney's Spotify list?
I think probably the most noteworthy one is the one that he's been using quite extensively here in 2012 at his campaign rallies as well, which is Kid Rock's Born Free. Which is, at first glance, you know, it's like, well, Kid Rock, who maybe not is the someone you would expect as someone that Mitt Romney would choose as a singer to associate himself with. But, you know, the song itself emphasizes being born free and emphasizes the idea of freedom. And it's been used at extensively at Romney rallies. It was also used in particular at the rally where Romney introduced Congressman Paul Ryan as his running mate. And in some ways, I think this song is a very good choice because it, you know, unlike some of the other songs we've talked about where you're trying to appeal to a group of voters maybe who don't traditionally support that candidate or that candidate's party, this one was revealed very early on during the nomination process and perhaps was used by Romney as a way to help shore up support amongst the Republican base, where he was a little weaker compared to some of the other candidates like Rick Santorum or Newt Gingrich, for instance. And I think it may be also a reflection of the Tea Party, you know, that message of being born free, because it's a very different message than what was sent in 2008 when Romney was running, where he used Elvis Presley's A Little Less Conversation, which is much more a song about being active and, you know, a little less conversation, a little more action. You know, if you elect me, I will take action to do things. Born Free is a song that more signals a message, well, government is doing too many things already. Let's protect your freedoms and have government do less is more the message of that song.
Well, let's take a listen to a little bit of Kid Rock's song. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Eric Casper and Benjamin Shaining. They are co-authors of Don't Stop Thinking About the Music, The Politics of Songs and Musicians in Presidential Campaigns. And we are talking about music and politics and the music that is being used in the presidential campaign going on right now and some of the flaps that have been in the news recently between music and politicians, like bands that do not want campaigns to use their song, like the band Twisted Sister last week or the week before, I think it was, telling vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan to stop using the song We're Not Going to Take It Anymore in his campaign appearances. And we're welcoming your questions and your thoughts on the power of music in political campaigns. Do you think it makes a difference? Do you have some suggested songs that you would suggest that the campaigns use? And why? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So Jack in Colfax couldn't stay on the line, but he wanted to suggest We Won't Get Fooled Again by The Who for a campaign song. So I think that would probably be a campaign song for Mitt Romney's campaign, Eric Casper.
Yeah, again, like we mentioned earlier, some songs are going to be a good choice for the incumbent. Some songs are going to be a good choice for the challenger. This one definitely would be a better song for the challenger.
All right, let's take a listen to that.
We don't get fooled again.
Yeah, good enough. All right, so in fact, I have to admit, I've heard that playing behind ads. I thought, but maybe I'm mistaken. not in this particular race, but Benjamin Shaining, your thoughts on the lyric is what's important in these songs?
Most of the time, yeah. What you're looking for when campaigns are choosing these songs is a powerful hook that resonates your message. And in this particular case, you know, the hook, "We Won't Get Fooled Again," accompanied by a really memorable musical line with a nice drive to it, is something that the electorate will remember. And I think I mentioned this a while back when we talked. But the advantage to using music in a campaign is if you can get the public to associate a particular song with your candidate, every time that song comes on the air, it almost acts as a mini advertisement for your candidate, so you get this repeated message through free airplay of music that you don't have to pay for.
All right, let's take a call. Ray in Eau Claire. Hello, Ray.
Good morning, Joy.
Good morning.
A while back when Michelle Bachmann was still pushing for a candidacy, she was using the song "American Girl," and the artist resented it and had her withdraw it, which made good fodder for Jay Leno's late-night comedy show, dwelling on Michelle's gaffes on the Paul Revere's ride and some international incidents. He said they'd come up with a perfect song. It's from Sam Cooke. It's "Don't Know Much About History."
All right, so...
Eric and Benjamin, thank you for appearing on.
Well, thank you, Ray, for for that. Yeah, I do remember that. That's yet another one of the flaps between a musician and a politician. So, "American Girl" was something that Michelle Bachmann was using frequently. Is that right, Professor Casper?
Yeah, she had made use of that. That's a Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers song. She also used what I think is. Would be a really great choice for a campaign song, which is "I Won't Back Down," another Tom Petty song. But a number of politicians have tried to use that song without permission, and they have gotten the letters from Tom Petty's lawyers, and they have backed down. That was the case here with Michelle Bachmann last year, whereby she did get called on using some of these Tom Petty songs, and then she did end up stop using them. But it is something that, I agree with Ray. You know, I mean, that can get you into some trouble, and it makes fodder for the late-night comedians, and it can take you off message. I mean, it still does, in all honesty, surprise me that candidates are still doing this when they know if it's a candidate they haven't gotten, or if it's a singer they haven't gotten permission from, and that singer holds a copyright, that they will publicly complain, and in some cases, even when they don't hold the copyright, they'll complain. Which, you know, I mean, the campaign has done what it needs to legally to secure the copyright in those cases, but it still makes for bad press, it's not something that then is going to allow you to continue on what your planned message was. It takes you off message, and that's why it still surprises me that it happened. You'd think with all the songs out there, they could just find ones and use ones that they can get permissions for.
Yeah. Do you, Professor Shaining, have an opinion on whether either of the campaigns are using a song to great effectiveness, that they picked a really great song to associate with the campaign?
Well, I'm taking a look at President Obama's campaign, and the song that you hear most often is the "Let's Stay Together," which is, in general, a great message. You know, he's put changes in place in the last 4 years, and he's trying to convince the country that we need to hold together and move forward collectively to see these changes through. But, I mean, one thing I would like to mention is just the use of the Spotify playlists in general. You think back to the elections in the 1800s, where it was really about candidates using songs to spread their messages like wildfire, and it almost seems like we're hearkening back to those days, with candidates now not feeling tied down to one or two songs, but being able to release entire lists that can play to multiple areas of the electorate and send multiple messages. And I mean, one of the things that I find, you know, kind of interesting on President Obama's playlist is the song No Nostalgia by Ages and Ages. I mean, really using it as an attack song against the Republicans, something that he probably wouldn't use at a campaign stop necessarily, but the fact that it's out there and he's really pushing on the Republicans' views of going backwards instead of looking forwards is kind of interesting. And at, on the other side, looking at Governor Romney's playlist, you take a look at something like Crying by Roy Orbison, who probably politically falls in line, but the song itself can be, you know, in a way taking a shot at President Obama and his policies and how we as a country are crying about the negative things that are happening and hearkening people back to the Republican side of the House. So the breadth of music that's being used can really, you know, say a lot about the candidates and their campaigns while not being the specific focus on one song that the candidates will use mainly in their rallies.
Let's take a call from Jason in Milwaukee. Hello, Jason.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have one of my favorite songs that I would like to recommend. It is Creedence Clearwater Revival's Fortunate Son.
For who?
You know what? At first I thought it would be, you know, like sarcastic for Romney to use it, but I really think maybe Obama should use it. I mean, what we know about Romney is he's the son of a millionaire, he's the son of a former governor, and he avoided going and serving in Vietnam by going to Paris, France to spread his religious faith. And that's everything that the song Fortunate Son really, really, you know, screams against.
All right, so this actually, let's take a listen. Oh, no, I guess we don't have it. I thought we did. All right. What about that would be something instead that perhaps the Obama campaign would play in an attack ad against Mitt Romney, wouldn't you say, Professor Casper?
I'd say it's something that, yes, you might be able to see something like that in an attack ad. Or perhaps something on the Spotify playlist, right? Because it's there on that type of playlist, and when people go to look at the playlist, they can, you know, they get the message. Okay, you know, Fortunate Son, he's referring to his opponent, but probably not something that you'd see either candidate playing at their own rally, because that would take away from whatever the main message of the rally is. But certainly as an attack ad or as kind of a dig at Governor Romney. You could see perhaps the Obama campaign using it for those purposes.
I guess we do have it. We might as well play it if we have it. Right. Any comment on that song, Professor Shaning?
Well, again, a good song for Obama to use as a jab against Romney, but you have to be careful about the song choices that you make for rallies. As Dr. Casper was saying, the idea is to stay on message, and I think when candidates are choosing songs that represent them in live rallies or that are going to be really heard on TV, not only do they want to stay on message, but they want it to be a positive message. You don't want your campaign, perhaps outside of the world of attack ads, to really have a strong negative vibe all the time. And by setting your one song up as a negative, you really run the risk of turning the electorate against you.
We are talking with Benjamin Shaning, an assistant professor of music and director of choral and vocal activities at Gainesville State College in Oakwood, Georgia, and Eric Casper, an associate professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin, Barron County, and the municipal judge in Rice Lake. They are co-authors of the book, Don't Stop Thinking About the Music, The Politics of Songs and Musicians in the Presidential Campaigns. They will be presenting their work at the Wisconsin Book Festival in Madison on November the 11th, after the election, and we are talking with them about the use of music in this presidential election and some in presidential elections past, and talking about the relationship between music and politics. And we're welcoming your questions for them. We're welcoming your suggestions for campaign songs or maybe questions about music and musicians and the presidential election. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up, Kathleen Dunn is with you. It's all things political after 9 o'clock. While the Republican convention has been postponed because of Tropical Storm Isaac, Kathleen and her guests will talk about what we might expect this week when things get underway tomorrow. And tomorrow at 7, by the way, the Ideas Network will bring you special coverage of the Republican National Convention from NPR. That's special coverage starting Tuesday night at 7 here on the Ideas Network. We are talking about music and politics during this hour with two guests who are co-authors of the book Don't Stop Thinking About the Music, The Politics of Song and Musicians in Presidential Campaigns. Lots of issues in the news recently involving music or musicians and politicians, including, well, this isn't a presidential campaign. This was our U.S. Senate race here in Wisconsin, and rocker Ted Nugent appeared at a rally for former Governor Tommy Thompson in his bid to win the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate. And let's take a listen to what Ted had to say at that rally.
People take on these politically correct, brain-dead, soulless liberal Democrats, and you will cause them much pain and suffering.
That was Ted Nugent criticizing a President Obama. He also called President Obama, I think, a member of a Chicago gangster. And while it's not actually a song, I was hoping our guests could comment a little bit on controversial musicians who endorse political candidates. Professor Casper, I guess it didn't hurt Tommy Thompson. He did win the primary.
He did, although he was quick to distance himself a little bit from Nugent's comments after that rally, stating that, quote, "I think in the heat of emotion, some rhetoric is said that can be explosive." And he did also say that he doesn't think that President Obama is a gangster.
Right.
Ted Nugent has been an outspoken when it comes to politics, supporting more conservative candidates and supporting candidates in particular who are supporters of gun rights and hunting rights. And so it's no surprise that, you know, he came out and made statements like that, because he has said some things like that in the past. But it's not as if, you know, he's the only musician who's done that. There are more of these comments right now by musicians that tend to be aimed at liberal politicians, in particular President Obama, because he's the incumbent, and those tend to be those musicians with more conservative views, but it's certainly not something that is only reserved for that side of the aisle. There's, of course, the famous incident in 2003 when the Dixie Chicks had a concert in London, and their lead singer, Natalie Maines, stated that she was ashamed that President Bush was from her home state of Texas, and she got a lot of pushback from that from her fan base, where the band actually suffered because of it, because their audience, at least up to that point, as country musicians, tended to be probably a little more conservative. And they receive a lot of backlash there from their fan base and from country-themed radio stations. Ted Nugent, because of his vocal support for conservative politicians and conservative causes before this, people who are still listening to his music and going to his concert probably are more in line with the political philosophy that he's expressed here at Governor Thompson's rally. So he's probably not going to receive the same type of backlash that the Dixie Chicks did in 2003.
Right. Well, let's take some more calls. We have Allison in Green Bay with us. Hi, Allison.
Hi, good morning, Joy.
Good morning.
I'm loving your program. I turned on the radio. This is a great, great topic. The power of music. My life changed as a child listening to All You Need Is Love and seeing the Vietnam War. So very powerful messaging. My question is, with some of the selections that President Obama is choosing, staying together, accepting, rolling with changes. I saw a program that showed film clips during the New Deal, during Franklin Roosevelt, that Americans had to be sold on the idea of shared sacrifice. And people love Medicare, and the New Deal included the concept of shared sacrifice. I'm wondering if the authors think that Barack, who's been criticized as not being the president of hope anymore, if his music, if you think that he's on track with keeping us together, keeping that idea of shared sacrifice. And by the same token, some of the selections, do you think that the Romney campaign, like Tommy Thompson, you know, Making America Great Again, or Wisconsin Great Again, is going to make America, it's kind of nationalistic.
All right. I'm sorry, Allison. I just wanted to get our guests in on this. So why don't we start with you, Professor Shaning, on whether or not you think how you think President Obama is doing with his selections, whether that's getting across the message of shared sacrifice.
I think in a way it is, with things like Roll with the Changes, trying to convince people that we need to share in the sacrifice and allow the changes time to actually work. And you also see that with, you know, even some songs like perhaps My Town or We Take Care of Our Own, and the idea that we have to sacrifice so others in the community can also have a job and also make a living as well. So in that way, I think he's actually doing a really good job musically of getting that message across. Although, as I said, with the exception of Let's Stay Together, which tends to be his main focus, most of the songs that you tend to get from Obama come from that Spotify playlist. So it's really contingent on people going and taking an active part in the campaign and listening to the songs themselves.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything to add to that, Professor Casper?
You know, I would say that the other thing that's probably going on, you know, because as the caller had mentioned, you know, during difficult times, you know, the part of the message is going to be shared sacrifice. The other big message that comes from that Spotify playlist from the president is one emphasizing, you know, the qualities and the goodness, perhaps, of the listener, the voter. Where a number of songs take the emphasis off of the campaign and President Obama and put it more on the listener. Examples such as Earth, Wind, and Fire's Got to Get You Into My Life, Ricky Martin's The Best Thing About Me Is You, U2's Even Better Than the Real Thing. I mean, these songs kind of are meant to send the message to the listener, which in turn is really the voter, that you're great. Right, and kind of takes away then from the listener thinking about, well, has the president really done a good enough job? It's more kind of, well, you as a listener, you as a voter, you know, you're a good person, you're a great person. Of course, you'll make the right decision and vote for me. Kind of becomes a message which takes it away a little bit, perhaps, from the campaign message related to policy, and more puts it on trying to pump up the voter.
I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Eric Casper and Benjamin Shaning, co-authors of Don't Stop Thinking About the Music, The Politics of Songs and Musicians in Presidential Campaigns.
Money.
And we are welcoming your suggestions of songs that the campaigns may want to use on the campaign trail to get across a political message. And our next caller is Chris in Prairie du Chien. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Yeah, I suggested Money since the Republicans are so against raising taxes to help our deficit.
So you would use that again as a song the Obama campaign should use in a negative ad against the Romney campaign?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I suppose that's where we're getting most of Professor Casper. Do politicians tend to do that, use songs in negative ads?
Well, what we've tended to see really since the mid to late 1960s is that the music on these ads tends to be background music. It tends to be a music that will support the message, which is really focused on what the speaker is saying, or it's really based on what you're seeing written across the TV screen. And so it actually is kind of a rare thing today to see a song with lyrics in a campaign ad. Oftentimes it really has become background music in these campaign ads, either the warm, happy-go-lucky type of music that you'll see in a positive ad for a candidate, or the dark, ominous, foreboding music that you'll get in an attack ad. So they really haven't done much in terms of in recent decades of putting that type of music on campaign ads. It's not like it was back in the 1950s where you had, for instance, I Like Ike and, you know, the visuals that went along with it, the cartoon visuals that went along with the song, really were supporting the music, as opposed to today where the music in these ads is really kind of the background and supports what you're seeing on and what perhaps a narrator is stating over the air.
I want to play another clip. This is a John Mellencamp song.
Well, I was born in a small town, and I lived in a small town.
Well, anyway, this was used during the recall campaigns, and Governor Scott Walker used this song when he would go from small town to small town for his own rallies. John Mellencamp told Governor Walker then that he could continue to use the song Small Town in the recall campaign, but that he, Governor Walker, should know that they differ on politics. So that's what happens sometimes to Professor Casper. The musician will say, "Go ahead and use it," but you know, I don't agree with you.
Yeah, well, this was one where Professor Shaning and I we looked at this one. We weren't sure if John Mellencamp actually owns the rights to the song or not. Certainly, if he doesn't own the rights to the song, that would help to explain why he said, "Yeah, use it," but hey, I don't agree with your message. If he does own the rights to the song and he's allowing it to go on, you know, perhaps that would speak more to the almighty dollar and the power of that, although I don't think that John Mellencamp is in any money trouble. But certainly it's no surprise that he did publicly object to Governor Walker's use of the song. You know, he's been an outspoken, John Mellencamp has been an outspoken supporter of the Democratic Party. He was at the 2004 Democratic National Convention. He endorsed John Edwards in 2008, and John Edwards used one of his songs at his campaign rallies. So it's no surprise that he did object, and he did so publicly. But this issue of why he, if he really objected, why he didn't stop the governor from using his song, that's a little bit of a mystery to me.
Let's take one last call. Jane in Dodgeville. Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Yes, we're almost out of time. What was your question?
Okay. Well, I've always kind of wondered why, instead of looking for snippets or bits from a current song, why they don't have someone just write something for themselves, specific to what they're thinking.
Great question. Professor Shaning, how come?
Well, I think it has to do more with recognition. In previous years, candidates did actually have songwriters or even the public submit songs that spoke more about them and about their message. And a lot of times those early songs even used familiar tunes. But I think what candidates have realized is that they can get the same message across to the electorate while using a song that's already popular, so they don't have to fight the uphill battle of getting the song known. The song has already fought that battle, and a lot of times what you'll see is candidates choosing songs that have actually done fairly well on the Billboard charts, so they know that the song will already have a popularity in public, and it's just really a matter of getting that song's message or the hook associated with their campaign and those two linked up.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. We're out of time. Thank you both very much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
Benjamin Shaning is an assistant professor of music at Gainesville State College in Oakwood, Georgia, and Eric Casper is an associate professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Barron County, co-authors of Don't Stop Thinking About the Music. This is the Ideas Network.